Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic classroom lectures in business and economics recorded for podcast. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2010. Lecture 14, delivered on March 18, 2010. The title of this lecture is Level Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, Level Annuities and Perpetuities, which is actually sort of lyrical when you think about it. Now, this, at the end of the day, once you get through this, it's a lot of it is over with, and there are some, you can get super complicated with these problems. And as I had mentioned a while back, when you get these problems too complicated, it doesn't prove much about your skill in doing the problems. It becomes more almost like a logic problem. Well, how do I arrange this puzzle so that I can get the stupid-ass thing done? Oddly enough, the last topic I'll cover today is perpetuities, which are easy. They're actually simple. Strangely enough, those are what you're going to see a little later in the course. A couple of times, we actually use the perpetuity formula or turn it around algebraically to use it. So if you can swing through this last grueling little piece, it kind of gets a little easier by the end of the day. But I want you to humor me here for a minute. Make sure that you have your calculators out. Tune them up. And I'm going to give you a rather easy problem to do here to start with. What will look like an easy problem involving a future value. So let's try, you put in $500 today, a year from today, and 2 years from today, so how much would you have at the end of that second year with discounting, using an interest rate, let's say, of, 6%, just to make it easy. How much would you have at the end of that second year? And again, using 6% interest. As your interest rate, annual interest rate. By the way, if I don't say annual, it is annual. We always use annual rates. Now, you're saying, well, is there a compounding period? I have told you the compounding period here, essentially by simply saying, look, you're dropping in this $500 each year, so the compoundings are going to happen each year as the balance in the account goes up. Now, here's the deal. Using just the simple future value formula, and also, I think I've said this before, but drawing out a timeline does not hurt one little bit when you're doing these kinds of problems. At least for me, they don't. So I'm going to draw my timeline here. I'm going to put in, here's 0, here's 1, here's 2, and here's the end of year 3, one day before end of year 2, one day before year 3 goes. Now, there are some professors who would say, well, that's not exactly a full year, so you'd have to use 364 over 365. Don't do that. It's a year, for God's sake. So you're going to pump into this account $500 right now. And that $500 is going to ride forward to the end. You're going to pump in another $500 at the end of the year, and that's going to ride to the end. And then you're going to pump in another $500, and that's going to ride to the end. So each of these, you can find its future value using the simple future value formula. Future value is the present value times 1 plus the interest rate to the nth power. So your first cash flow, the one you drop in now, $500, that one will have an N of 3. So the first one is going to be, the first future value is going to be 500 times 1 plus 0.06 to the third power. A 1, a 2, a 3, to quote Lawrence Welk, a fabulous musician. Now the second one is going to be, for its future value, is going to be 500 times 1 plus 0.06, and it's going to ride 1 2-year. And the third one is going to have a future value of 500 times 1 plus 0.06 to the first power. So working this out as nothing but a chain of lump sum future values, and you'll hear me use that term from time to time, the future value of lump sum, and all we're doing is chaining lump sums, we would have for the first one 500 times 1.06 to the third. That one will buy us $595.51. And then we do the second one, 500 times 1.06 to the second power, and that will give us, is that right? Yeah, $561.80. And then the third one, 500, I lost my way there, and I again caution, for God's sake, make sure you watch my arithmetic. $530. Then you add those up, and you will get that this, the future value of this level annuity, and it was a level annuity, the level amount, is $1,687.31. Okay, well, that would be a pain in the butt to do it that way if you had a level annuity of, let's say, 20 years. It would be great if we had a formula to do that. And we do have a formula for future values of level annuities. The future value of a level annuity formula works like this. The future value of a level annuity is going to be the level cash flow times 1 plus k over d to the d times n minus 1, all of that divided by k over d, where k is the interest rate, d is the number of compoundings per year, and cf is the level cash flow amount. So that should be the end of it. No problemo. I speak a little Spanish. Okay. So let's do this. I mean, D is 1. This has got to be an easy one. This is a no-brainer. The level cash flow is 500. 1 plus 0.06 to the D times N, well, that would be 1 times 3 minus 1 over 0.06 over 1. So this should give us the same answer. Thank goodness for this formula. So we go 1.06 to the third minus 1 equals, divided by 0.06. 3.18 is our annuity factor. And then we times that by 500. And something ugly happens. We get $1,591.80. No, that's not right. 91.80. Sorry, I wrote 91.80. No, that's not rounding error. To quote the old Wonder Bread commercials, what's a mother to do? Well, here's what this mother tells you. The problem is that future value of an annuity formula works on a different assumption about the cash flows beginning and ending. That future value annuity formula actually looks at cash flows as if they're happening at the end of the period instead of the beginning of the period. And see, so what I actually calculated here was what would the future value be if the cash flows had happened, instead of the first one at zero, it had happened at one. The second one had happened not at one, but at two, and the third one would have happened at three instead of two. And what's funny about it is, that's unrealistic. Yeah, I put $500 in the bank at the end of the first year, $500 in the bank at the end of the second year, $500 in the bank, well, no, $500 in the bank at the end here, $500 in the bank at the end here, $500 in the bank here, and then I collect it all out. That's almost stupid. Why would I put that last $500 in there? Well, unfortunately, that's how the formula works. So if you want to use this formula, you have to modify it. You have to turn it into an annuity due formula. And there are different ways that you can do this. But in order for this formula to work on that, where the cash flows begin at the beginning of the period, you would have to mod this formula so that it was essentially saying the future value of an annuity due is the cash flow times 1 plus K over D to the D times N minus 1 minus 1 over K over D plus the cash flow one more time. And, of course, the burning question in your mind should be, what? Yeah, see, because what I'm going to do here is I'm going to calculate it as a regular future value of an annuity and then just hang one more number off the end of it. So that essentially what will happen is to do this formula correctly, I have to do that stupid thing there, I believe. I think that'll work. That's why future values suck. And I strongly encourage you not to do too much worrying. I'm not going to ask you about future annuities and dues and all of that. My interest is mostly for a finance person, especially in this kind of managerial finance. What I care about is present values. That's what we focus on in this course, is what the value of future is now. But I just want to expose you to a little bit of the nastiness of this kind of thing. Now, there's actually a present value of an annuity due as well. And I'm going to return to that now. I think that's right. I hope it's right. But I wanted to expose you. Watch out if you do the problems in the book and you try to do annuity due. Always watch out for the assumption with an annuity of especially future value annuities. But I really avoid the formula when I can, the annuity due formula. I just think about the cash flow pattern. Let me show you a problem here. Okay. You will start getting $400 every year for the next 5 years. You'll get your first check now. What's the present value of this level annuity? Now, the present value of an annuity is 1 minus 1 plus k over d to the d times n, all divided by k over d. Of course, I ought to put the cash flow in there. Present value of an annuity is cash flow times 1 plus k over d, 1 minus the quantity, 1 plus k over d to the dn, all divided by k over d. Now, the problem with this formula, you can't just throw it at a problem. You have to think about it, because this formula assumes that the cash flows are occurring at the end of the period. In this case, though, that's not happening. That does not mean you have to revert to the present value of an annuity due formula. That's another formula for you to memorize. It's actually better for you to just construct the problem properly and use a normal annuity formula. Look, this annuity that I've got happening right here, drawing it on a timeline, there is no 5 years. There is no five. Well, wait a minute. It said 5 years. No, there's not. You see, your first cash flow is happening now. The second one is happening in a year. The third one is happening in 2 years. Fourth one is happening in 3 years. The fifth one is happening in 4 years. Four is the number, not five. Now, here's an interesting thing I'm going to ask you. So really, this is just a four-year annuity. You see the four-year annuity there? And a residual $500. I'm going to ask you a question. Let's see if you can get this one. Madam, what's the present value of $500 in your pocket right now? I'm going to give you $500. What's its present value? Yeah, you said that way too fast. That irritates me. That's right, it's $500. It doesn't have any discounting. It happened now. So you see what is really happening in that problem. Did you say that five? I put that five out there on the six. Sorry about that. So what's really happening here is... what? God! Shut up. God Almighty, don't get to be my age. Shoot yourself. Save your family embarrassment and some money on depends. Here we go. What the hell are you laughing at? Okay. Actually, there's the annuity right there. It's a four-year annuity. If I apply the regular annuity formula, I telescope that back to here. 500 times 1 minus 1 plus, where the hell, I didn't put an interest rate. It's 6%, okay? Oh, it's like skiing behind a rowboat listening to me sometimes. And that's a negative up there. Talking, chewing gum at the same time. Okay, there's the 4-year annuity. Telescope back. And then all you do is add $500 onto it at the end. Just add $500, because there's a $500 that's occurring right now. So you do it as a regular annuity, but a four-year annuity, and then you tack on that residue of the $500 that happened right away. That way you don't have to memorize an annuity due formula to do this problem. Just do it like a regular annuity. Okay? Now, you might be thinking, well, I'd rather memorize an extra formula than try to do this. Unfortunately, these timelines become crucial in these problems. Look. See, because what's going to happen? Well, let me actually calculate that out here just to make sure that it makes sense. Okay, it's actually 1 minus 1.06 y to the x, 4 plus neg divided by 0.06 times 500, 173255. That part's 173255. And then you add another $500 to it. Did I make a mistake? No, that's it. Yeah. No, they're not. No, they're not. What the hell is going on with me? Jeez, I got to check for another dealer on my the blow I'm using. What the hell is going on with me? Yeah, they're $500, not $400. Boy. Okay, but anyway, 2232.55. And again, all I did was I turned it into just a normal annuity with a kicker at the beginning, a front-end kicker. Now, these timelines, the reason I teach it this way is because these timelines become crucial in complex patterns of cash flow. Let me show you one that's where things, you can actually do it different ways, but you have to know about the timings, and you have to pay attention to how the timings are going to affect the way you do the formula. You're going to receive $300 for the for 7 years starting now and then 700 dollars for 5 additional years. What is the present value of this cash flow? Discounted at 5%. Now, I've actually met some people who have the gift to be able to see these in their head. And most people can begin to do this. If they do enough of them, they can begin to see it in their heads. I'm not one of those people. I don't know why. I have to draw the timeline. It helps. Because what has happened here is that effectively I have the starting point, zero. And then I'm going to go 1 year, 2 years, and I'm just going to mark out, it looks like 12 years are involved here. That will turn out to be not the case, but it looks like it. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I'm going to mark out these years. And then I'm going to write in the cash flows that occur periodically. So right off the bat, I've got a $300 that's pushing in. Then I've got another $300 on the 1, $300 on the 2, $300 on the 3, $300 on the 4, $300 on the 5, and I keep a count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and $300 on the 7, $300 on the 6. Okay? Now, that then, the cash flow bumps up to $700 for an additional 5 years. So I'm just going to write that in. I'm going to have an additional 5 years of $700. So I'm going to put in $700. If I do that, I see that there is no year 12 involved in this. Are you with me on this? Now, at this point, there are actually a couple of different ways you can attack. And truth be told, I'm going to take what might be the simpler approach. It might be a little more calculation. I'm not even sure about that. But there are a couple of ways that I could do this. See, what I could look at is I could actually look at this as a level annuity of 300. But also another annuity that kicks in at year 7 of 400. So I telescope an 11-year annuity back and try to work on this $400 annuity hanging out here. I could do it that way, but I don't think I will. I think I'm just going to attack it just as two separate annuities. Now, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to deal with this mess right here, this $300. And I recognize that my annuity formula assumes that the annuities, the present value of annuity formula, assumes that the annuity begins here at year 1. It does not here. It begins at year 0. So the first thing I'll have to do is I'll have to say I'm going to put in just a $300 kicker. And then I'm going to deal with what is actually a 4-year annuity pulled back. So I'll have 300 times 1 minus 1 plus 0.05 to the negative 4th power. 4 periods on this annuity, all divided by 0.05. That takes care of the $300 piece of this action. You see what I did there? Let me make sure you see it. Not even close, yeah? Oh, I'm so 7. I'm just testing your ass, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Still stuck on the last problem. See, because I have this piece right here, which is actually just a very normal present value annuity problem, which I'm going to bring back to here along with this $300 that's happening right now. Its present value is going to be 300. That one that happens now, it's got a present value of 300. Onto that, I'm going to tack another $300 6-year annuity, telescoping it back to now. So that gets me that. Now comes the pain in the ass. Well, actually, maybe I ought to calculate those out before I really lose my way here. 1 minus 1.05 to the negative. Let's turn on the calculator. Okay, really, you know, come on, noob. 1 minus 1.05, y to the x, 6 pos neg, equals, divided by 0.05, equals, times 300, 1522.71. So that part's 1522.71. That part's still the 500, the 300 that we did. Okay, so we got the pieces of the 300 taken care of. Now, here's the thing. I've got a $700 annuity. It's a 5-year annuity. If I were to just apply 700 times 1 minus 1 plus 0.05 to the negative 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all divided by 0.05. What that would do is that would take this block right here of $700 and land it there. That's where it would land it. That's okay because I have a lump sum that has now landed at year 6. I can just take a present value of that lump sum. Notice how these get complicated. But I can just treat this like a regular annuity. I can do 1 minus 1.05 y to the x. That is, how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 5. Y to the x, 5 posneg equals divided by 0.05 times 700. So right there at year 6, that piece is $3,030.63. That's what that is worth right there. When I take a present value of an annuity, it drops the whole mother or the whole thing back to one period before the first one happened. And make sure, did I get that did that come out to be 30? Okay. So now I can say, okay, how about now I just take that thing back as a lump sum to the present? Well, how far would I have to take it back? I'd have to take it back 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 periods to pull it back to the present. So at the end of the day, I'm going to take $3,030.63 and just take it back 6 periods, 1 plus 0.05 to the negative 6. And what will happen at the end there is I'll get for that last piece 1.05 to the negative 6. Whoa, that was a big number. Something really went ugly. To the negative 6 times 3030.63 is 2261.50. So that is what that $700 annuity that streamed for 5 years out there in the outlands is worth now to me. And I can add that to the other pieces, the 15,22.71 plus the 300 kicker. Let's try that again. And I should get $4,084.21. Now, the reason I am doing this is to show you there are other ways that I could have done this, attacked this. But the timeline, drawing the timeline, is useful. It's huge for doing these because it gets you to see when events are happening and what the formula is going to do. Like, for example, in that $700 piece of the cash flow, when I drew out the timeline, I saw, okay, I can calculate the present value of a level annuity of $700 for 5 years. What will that give me? That will give me a number. That will give me a number that is the present value 1 year before the $700 starts kicking in. That tells me, okay, now I know exactly how much I have to discount that lump sum back to get its value now. This is going to be very typical in these problems. You got an annuity way out here that's happening in the future. The first thing you do is get its present value. But you won't get its present value here and now. You'll get its present value 1 year before the annuity starts. Then you take that lump sum and you telescope that clear back with the simple lump sum annuity formula to its present value. So what that would mean is that in a problem and in a slightly more advanced course, one I teach in, as a matter of fact, I do this in an insurance course. I have you figure out what you are worth. And we do some simplifying assumptions. You start making, let's say 80,000, okay, in your case, 40,000 a year, 50. Let's say you make a level amount of money, but you're not going to make that right away. You're still stuck here for 2 more years, maybe 4 more, 8 more. So what happens, depending upon how much you really want to start paying off your student loans. But what's going to happen is that your present value of your future expected cash flows will telescope back to a value that won't be now. It will be a few years from now. And then you have to bring that lump sum value forward to now. So what would that tell you? That tells you how much term life insurance you should have. Because if you die, you would like to have your life insurance pay your bereaved loved ones what you're worth now. So then it becomes a balancing act. Because think about it this way. You, madam, were dreaming of that PhD in finance, yes? Or not? Okay, not, probably. But you think about this. That would be 8 years down the road. You'd make more money, and your cash flow, that annuity would be have higher numbers in it, but those higher numbers would be happening later. So when you took the present value of the annuity, you'd get a nice big fat number, but then you'd have to discount that lump sum back 8 years. If you start out right now, let's say 2 years from now, you will have smaller numbers constructing the annuity, but that lump sum of the present value of that annuity, when you telescope it back to now, it won't be discounted as heavily because it's occurring only 2 years in the future. So there's the balancing act in your calculus of whether to go on for a PhD. Some people say, well, let's look at different scenarios. And if you actually do financial planning, you can look at different scenarios and say, what is it worth? Do I have a higher present value postponing my annuity, the stream of cash flows, for 2 years, 4 years, or 8 years? You could think about the intermediate scenario. What would you get with an MBA? You know, a mindless babbling asshole. Marginal brain allocation. No. How much more will I get with an MBA? How much more do I have to discount the stream of cash flows from that higher MBA salary to the present? So it becomes actually sort of a realistic kind of exercise, and we do a lot of thinking about this in financial planning. Some people I know would say, I'm going to do a low-paying job for 3 years, but because I do that low-paying job, that gets me hooked in with some very powerful interests. Very often people go into government jobs, they clock 3 years at a low pay, and then they've got all their connections in industry, and then they can go out there and make huge paychecks. I know I have friends who've done that. Pisses me off at their asses. One of my friends, he took a job right out of his master's degree in economics, and it's $17,000 working for the state. 3 years later, he quit for the state, and he started working for one of the major energy companies for close to $125,000 a year. Why? Because he knew all the people in the regulatory agency that he had worked for. So he became extremely valuable. So he had foregone high cash flow here, higher cash flow here. He could have gotten a job for $40,000, $50,000 a year that would have been continuous for a very high cash flow that occurred at starting at year four, that was much larger, because the present value there telescoped back much worth much more than an annuity that started now that had lower numbers all along the way. So there is a real meaning to what we're doing here. The last piece of this is what is called a perpetuity. A perpetuity. Now on the quiz, I'm just going to give you some kind of weird cash flow thing like what I've just done here. And I'm going to ask you to work it out. And I'll do a couple of them just so that you can get the idea of this puzzle nature. It's like putting together a puzzle. And like I said, there were a couple of ways you could have done this one. But just give you a couple just to expose you to this kind of thing. But here's the last piece. It's called a perpetuity. I've brought this up before, but I want to emphasize it one more time. You are going to die someday. When you do, it will hurt like hell. Okay, you'll fuss and you'll bitch, and then you'll go to hell. Okay? You're a business major. We don't go to heaven.
I'm a business major.
You aren't? What are you?
ITK.
You will go to hell. Oh, yes. You will. I'll see you there, sucker. Okay, look. No, but you see, unlike people, money can live on. You remember when I talked to you about corporations, that corporations actually don't have a theoretically finite life. Theoretically, they are immortal. They live forever. And that's just the way it is. People die. Corporations don't have to die. Most of them do, but they don't have to by the nature of their existence. We get old. We get decrepit. We have tubes sticking out of us that leak and make it feel weird when the stuff trickles down our back. But a corporation isn't like that at all. So we have to talk about these things that actually live forever. And if a corporation lives forever, then a cash flow, theoretically, could live forever. If you hold stock in a corporation and you're getting a dividend, as long as that corporation remains sound, that dividend should keep coming at you forever and ever and ever. So then the question would be, if I get a dividend of, let's say, $2 every year, forever and ever and ever, what's the present value of that? That, interestingly enough, is the first basis we use for pricing stock. If I look at the dividend now, and that's a level dividend, I can say, well, that dividend should go on forever. Now, you might think to yourself, well, the present value of an infinite stream of $2 bills is infinite. No, it's not. Because as the $2 goes farther and farther out in time, it gets worth less and less. Here's the formula for it. Here's the formula. And I'll do this in terms of dividends, but it's really any cash flow, level cash flow, this applies to. If the cash flow goes on forever, if the dividend D, capital D, is permanent and occurs every period, this is important, for the same amount. Then the present value of that perpetuity is going to be D over K, where K is the discount rate you would use. K is the periodic discount rate. So if the, and this is assuming that the dividend is level, it will never change. We've got one that can make for a little bit more realism, but this one actually has a realism to it too. Preferred stock is a level dividend. You get a level dividend forever from preferred stock. That's how preferred stock works. There's a face value of a preferred share, and then there's a percentage dividend. You take that percentage times the face value. That's the dividend check you'll get every year forever and ever and ever, as long as the company doesn't die. So this actually, you can price a preferred share right from here. Let's try this. Your dividend from ABC stock, Inc. stock, is $1.50 per year. What is ABC stock worth if the discount rate is 8%? Well, it's so simple, it's ridiculous. Present value of the perpetuity would be $1.50 over 0.08. Survey says you get $18.75. Isn't that interesting? Kind of a cool thing. It's not an infinite amount. It's actually a finite amount. Now let me give you a realistic one, and let's look at something kind of interesting off this. But there's a formula that I'll show you in a little bit here that will be if we have a constant growth dividend as well. But right here, you're going to see this formula again a little later in the course when we get to the marginal cost of capital. Because this is how we can actually figure out the yield. We just turn the formula around, we can get the yield on preferred stock, on preferred, or the cost, I should say, the cost of preferred stock capital, how much it would cost to raise, to use preferred stock. Now, as I told you, preferred stock, and now I'm going to do a realistic example, a quite realistic example, show you something interesting about it. Preferred stock works like this. You buy a share. Now, the share will have a face value. It's like debt. Preferred stock is actually close to being like debt. Did I make that a mistake, or is that right? 1875? Preferred stock, now, it's like debt. It has a face value, and it has a percentage. That percentage tells you what percent of the face value you'll get as a dividend on the preferred every year. Now, with preferred, common stock cannot get a dividend unless the preferred gets its dividend first. That's why it's called preferred. It's sort of like a hybrid between debt and equity because it has a prior claim over common stock. One other thing about preferred stock also, if it's cumulative preferred, if you don't pay the dividend, if the company doesn't pay the preferred dividend and it's cumulative preferred, they have to pay that dividend sooner or later. They can't pay common stock a dividend until they've taken care of all their back dividends on preferred. So that's cumulative preferred. Preferred is something that you oftentimes recommend. For example, you would say, well, someone wants fixed income. I would say, older people, go for bonds and go for preferred stock. Those are much more certain cash flow. It's like a fixed amount. So let me do one that's a fairly simple one. The par value of KMA preferred is $100, and the dividend is 6%. What's the price now of KMA preferred if the discount rate on the dividends is, and I'm going to give you three different discount rates to use. I'm going to give you a discount rate of 4%, a K of 4%, a K of 6%, and a K of 8%. Price of KMA preferred. And it's just a crank it out, very simple formula. So for the 4%, your price would be the dividend amount, which is 6% of $100. So the dividend is $6, right? $6. $6 divided by 0.04, which comes out to be, what is it? $150. If I had discounted at 6%, I would have taken $6 divided by 0.06, which would have come out to be, it would have sold at par. Well, that's odd. Well, let's see what happens at 8%. At 8%, the price would have been the $6 level dividend divided by 0.08, which would come out to be what? Well, isn't that odd? See the pattern? If I discount at below the coupon, the price is above par. If the discount rate is the coupon, is the dividend rate, it is priced at par. If the discount rate is higher than the coupon, then the preferred sells at a discount to par, $75. In other words, that old rule that I had shown you before, remember when I showed you the same idea about the inverse relationship of yield and price? It's happening here right now. Notice that if I'm getting a 6% dividend on CAMA preferred, but the market thinks I should get only 4%, this preferred stock is very valuable because I'm getting more than I should. I'm getting 6% in a market environment that says I should get only 4%. So I get gravy. So this stock is worth a lot because it's paying me more than it should. On the other hand, in the other extreme, if I am getting 6% on this stock, but the market says you should be getting 8%, then this stock is going to get punished. It's not going to be worth very much because all I'm getting is a $6 dividend and the market says you should be getting 8. So the price will reflect that right there. But right on the button, if the discount rate the market says I should get is the coupon I am getting, or the dividend, I should say, in this case, then it will price right on the button at par. This is the same thing that happens with bonds, too. If the coupon on a bond is better than what the market thinks you should get, the bond will sell above $1,000. If the coupon on the bond is less than what the market thinks you should get for that bond, then the bond will sell for less than $1,000. So you're seeing right here that if I were to graph this, in this case, at $25 increments, let's say, on the price and over here on the K-axis, what I'm saying here is that when the K is above, when the K is below 6%, you'll get a high price on the bond. When the K is above 6%, you'll get a I should draw those 1, 2, 3, 4 like that. So there's an inverse relationship there. It's something that we'll go over again later. And I'll talk more about this now. But for the purposes of this exercise, know that you'll see this again. We figure out the cost of equity capital with these two simple formulas. This is the one we'll use to find the cost of preferred stock capital if we want to raise money to do projects by selling preferred stock. There's another one. I spell dividend, for God's sake. Now, realistically, though, stock, other than preferred stock, stock does not pay the same dividend forever. The dividend fluctuates. If it fluctuates randomly, we're in a painful thing. But if we can say that overall this stock grows at a known rate, then we have another formula. If the dividend is permanent and starts now at D0 and grows at a constant rate, of G, then the present value of the perpetuity, and here's where I always try, I do it two different ways. Do not use D0. You use the dividend at period one. And I'm going to write a little D1 here. I'm going to write a big D1. Recognizing that D1 is actually D0 grown one period at the growth rate over the discount rate minus the growth rate. Now, the growth rate has to be below the discount rate. Okay? The discount rate has to be below, otherwise you get some weird-ass negative answer. So let me show you what I'm talking about here. Let me show you. JMT Corp has just paid a 75-cent dividend. Which is expected to grow at a constant rate of 10% from now on. If the dividends are discounted at 12%, what is the current price of JMT Corp common stock? For God's sake, do dividend one. Don't put 75 cents in the numerator. You grow 75 cents one period. So if I do the price of JMT common, I will do it as a constant growth perpetuity. So it will be 0.75 grown one period times 1 plus 0.10, all divided by the discount rate, 0.12, minus the growth rate, 0.10. Grow the stupid dividend. And again, this one will be, when we go to the cost of capital, we will rearrange this formula so that we can calculate cost of using common stock, raising money through common stock to finance our projects. It will be this formula just rearranged. But again, you have to make sure that if you know the dividend now, you grow at one period for any formula, for any purpose. So in this case, if the dividend is 75 cents now and the dividend is growing at 10% a year, then the dividend next year will be 82.5 cents. Okay? So I would say that actually, for the purposes of this formula, it's
0.0825 over 0.02. So the price of the stock is $41.25. Just like that. It's not hard. Just make sure you use D1, not D0. I mean, these are painfully easy to do. That's how you do them. And I'll give you one or two of these on the test. You can get a little complicated. You can do some kind of odd scenarios. You can say, well, you're going to hold the stock for 5 years, growing the dividend will grow at 10% a year, and then at the end of year five, you'll sell the stock for $25. What's the price that you would pay now for it? You can do some oddball things, but the core of it's just that simple formula right there. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.